Well, it's lovely to be here with you today. This is Carol here with Arts Live and Local. And as you well know, there's been a lot of Christmas music going. Oh, that's because today is Christmas Eve. Well, not today, but tonight. But it was fun to find this album. That was actually coming from Bela Fleck and the Flecktones, Jingle All the Way. I suspect Bob Goldberg gave it to me. Thank you very much. And of course, that is throat singing from various parts of the world where that is done. Try it sometime. And while you're there, you can try talking to my first guest. Maggie, are you there?
I am. Hello.
Oh, good. Okay. I'm hearing all kinds of clicking sounds, but I think we'll be okay. Not sure what's going on. Anyway, Maggie Wall is here with me. And, I'm going to check on that and see if there's something we can do to stop.
I hope it's not on my end. We're live here.
Yeah, we're live here too. I'm not sure what's going on. Do you hear it?
I hear it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we don't know what the mystery is, but as Bob Piles said last week, it's that time of year. We had it at Halloween time too. Mystery in the telephones. So we'll just go right ahead. And
well, I'm sorry to your listeners. That must be a little annoying.
Do you hear it too?
I do hear it.
Huh. I wonder, should we try calling back?
Does she have another phone?
Oh, do you have it? You don't have another phone, do you?
Not where I am right now.
Okay. Okay, well, let's go ahead and, folks, we're going to just keep talking, and you can focus on the fabulous Margaret Wall and the Astoria School of Ballet. And Maggie is the founder and the director and the choreographer for the Astoria School of Ballet, which has its studio in the Liberty Theater. Now, Maggie, you've been here for how many years?
We founded the school in 2004.
Wow. Amazing. What year did you get here, Maggie?
2004.
Yeah, that's what I suspicioned. So you jumped right into it, didn't you?
I came with a mission.
You came with a mission. I love that. And the mission is a success. And most years you have presented an original ballet, often to classical music.
Mm-hmm.
And what ages do you work with in your ballet school?
I will start students as soon as they are out of diapers, typically three.
Wow.
And I go all the way up to, maybe she would prefer I didn't say this, but I believe I have an adult student in her 70s.
Hey, that could be me, but it isn't.
So we cover it all.
Fabulous. Okay. So now you've had 2 years of pandemic. What did you do during that time?
We kept going as best we could. Of course, there were the shutdowns that were forced for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as we could, we got on Zoom and were teaching classes that way.
Oh.
With kids at home in their living rooms and bedrooms.
Wow.
And me teaching in the studio until eventually we were able to all come back. We've done some in the throes of the pandemic. in 2020. We filmed a cool outdoor performance all around town. We rehearsed it outside too, so it was during the summer. And that was a great fun and great success. Last year, we were not able to put on our full annual spring production, which usually has many, many schools from the county and the surrounding area actually take field trips to come see our productions every year. Last year at that time, schools were just barely reopening, so there were, of course, no field trips. So last year in May, we did a fun mini performance during Art Walk. We had a scavenger hunt around town.
Oh, that was wonderful.
And yeah, in four windows. It was really cool. And
That was so much fun. It was just walking around town with a map, and you would come up to a storefront, and there would be I don't know how many were the most dancers in a window in costume, and they would do a small, very short performance or just take a pose, and it was absolutely delightful. I was hoping that we could do more of that.
You know, it was so popular. I don't know. We might bring that back.
Yeah. Yeah,
it was really fun for the kids, too.
Very special. I want to mention that when you say that schools would take trips and come to the theater, it was phenomenal because Liberty seats 650, and there are sometimes as many as four performances, and and the theater might be full for at least two, maybe three of those performances. And the kids were terrific. And for many of those kids, it was their first time in a real theater. And what a theater to start in, huh? To come into the Liberty Theater and see this beautiful ballet of kids, sometimes their own age, and understand that there's a greater world out there. So I'm sure many were inspired. So then this year for the holidays, you did something else. What was that?
Last weekend on Saturday, the Liberty was fortunate enough to book Santa in his busy time. So
wow.
He was visiting the Liberty in the kiosk.
Uh-huh.
And during his visit, we were doing on stage, we did five mini performances of the Nutcracker. We just did selections from the party scene. The whole shebang lasted about 14 minutes for each show, but it was great to be on stage again in front of live audiences. The performances were free to everybody who visited Santa.
Mm-hmm.
The vibe was very joyful, and
I bet the kids
really fun.
Were absolutely thrilled to be performing for an audience as well.
Yes, yes.
Especially on the stage and not in their living rooms. That would
exactly.
That's kind of tough. So, okay.
Now, it was a really good turnout. It was really
exciting. Oh, great. So now you have a new project, and we wanted to share that with the audience and see if some people might be interested in working with you on that. So why don't you tell us about The Gift of Dance?
Yes, well, this past summer, I had the opportunity of teaching dance at a summer camp that was run by the Warrenton School District. And it served, not all, but some of the kids were underprivileged and underrepresented in the community. A lot of kids with from Latinx backgrounds and Spanish-speaking households. And I realized over the 5 weeks that I was teaching there, A, how much talent there was in the group, and B, what an opportunity gap there is in our general area and in the performing arts in general, opportunity gaps in extracurricular arts education. It occurred to me that a lot of kids that were attending the camp wouldn't necessarily have parents who could afford to give them the gift of dance or dance education. And so I realized that we needed to start a scholarship program for kids who, like I said, otherwise wouldn't have the opportunity. So working with Warrington, we picked a number of students to start. We went for a major large grant in September in collaboration with the Liberty Theater, who's worked very closely with me on this. And the grant, unfortunately, fell through. So now we're just kind of trying to keep it going, of course. I'm not giving up by any means. But it has been a struggle to keep things funded. We're providing everyone with leotards and tights and shoes. Mm-hmm. The boys get shorts and T-shirts and shoes. Mm-hmm. We're helping to provide transportation to and from ballet for those who don't have the means.
Nice.
We'll need costumes for all of those kids when it comes time for performances. So that all adds up pretty quickly. But recently, we've decided actually that this calls for a nonprofit arm of our business. So we will be following suit with that in early 2022. But in the meantime, fortunately, the Liberty and the board has agreed to accept donations on our behalf to help cover our rent at the theater, which then sort of frees up money to go toward the scholarship program, which was just a really kind and generous gesture, I thought, on their behalf. And I think it shows that they want to be involved and are engaged with us.
Right.
Very much.
Well, okay, so what this means, if I understand correctly, is that people can donate to the Liberty with the caveat that the donation, that particular donation, because I'm sure people are donating for the Liberty itself, but that particular donation would go towards the rent for the Astoria School of Ballet. And
yes,
since the Liberty is a 501c3,
exactly,
stay with me, folks, that means that, here we go, you may make the donation, and that is, of course, tax deductible. And
exactly.
then here's the cream on the, or the cherry on top, or the cream on the, on my Mexican hot chocolate, which, thank you, Jimbo.
Oh.
Sorry, I shouldn't be tempting everybody. is that you may turn around and make a donation to the Oregon Cultural Trust. And the big thing about that is it is a straight-out credit, not a deduction, a credit. If you pay any taxes to the state of Oregon and you care about the arts, and I reckon you do if you're listening to Arts Live and Local, then you can designate by giving to the Oregon Cultural Trust that your tax money goes for the arts, because it will be taken right off the top of your taxes, state taxes. So you only have till December 31st. KMUN is also, can't pass this by without a plug, KMUN is also part of that 501c3. Many, many of the theaters and the heritage, the arts, the heritage, the cultural organizations, if you have made donations, or if this inspires you to make a donation, which I hope it will, because Maggie and I and you believe in the arts, how it can change people's lives, how it can enhance the life. So check it out, folks. And for the Liberty, the website is libertyastoria.org. And be sure to make a note, or if you don't find the right place, you can call them and let them know your donation, or you can just send it in, is for Astoria School of Ballet, and then turn around and go to Oregon Cultural Trust. KMUN.org is us over here. And I am delighted to hear, Maggie, that ASB is heading towards nonprofit status. I think it'll be a good thing. This is the gift of dance. How can you lose, folks? I really am thrilled that you're doing this. I believe dance, movement, especially for children, is crucial. Any kind of movement. And what I love about the way you work with the kids is you find their strengths and you create around them. Kind of like the professional ballet. Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention, Margaret Wall was a professional ballerina. But we got lucky. Maybe she didn't, but we did. And she became a teacher of ballet and then a founder of this Astoria School of Ballet. So, Maggie, do you have a you can decide if you want to give people the website and or a phone number where they can get more information about this.
Yes, our website is www.astoriaschoolofballet.com. And our school phone number is 503-325-3600. And if you have any questions at all, feel free to give me a call, especially before the 31st.
Yes, for sure. Yes. But yes, you can make the donations after. Hey, it'll count for next year, right? The main thing is to support the arts, all the arts. Yeah. And we have wonderful possibilities here in this area, including in dance. But this is a special program for kids who might not have that opportunity, and I'm just delighted. Thank you so much for doing that. And I plan to give a gift of dance myself. So,
oh, Carol, thanks. Thanks for having
Maggie.
Me on.
You bet.
You know, I'm lucky to have found this community, too.
Mm-hmm.
So.
It's a
pretty special place.
It's a good fit.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, happy holidays.
And
thanks for being here. Okay, bye-bye now.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. That was Maggie Wall with the Astoria School of Ballet. And, yeah. Coming up next, I've got some music for you and then another very special guest whom many of you will recognize. And he's got some new stories to tell. So stay tuned. And here's some music from the Maritimes. Okay. How about I give you the correct... There we go. Mais Noël en Acadie. Oh, yes. Well, that was music, a maritime Christmas celebration with Clary Croft. And I'm sure that my friend Carol from Nova Scotia, from Nouvelle-Écosse, however, now in British Columbia, in a new place, I suspect she gave me that. And that was... Mais Noël en Acadie, and Acadian food and customs, and then deck the hall with boughs of holly. And so that goes out to all my Nouvelle-Écosse family, especially to the Tarios, the Bellevaux, and of course to Carol and Tessa and Sev and Sydney and Robin and Kyle and Lisa. And if you have a connection with Nova Scotia, it goes to you too. I've got a fabulous Nova Scotia car plate, thanks to my good friend Scott at the Cannon Beach Gallery. I love having Nova Scotia in my house. And there's someone else I love having around, and he, if all goes well, is on the line. Dave, hello.
Good afternoon, Carol.
Oh, it's great to hear you. And there's no clicks either. I don't know whether you heard our last guest. We've been having telephone issues the last few weeks, but you are spot on. My guest is Dave Densmore, well known in this community as one of our primo fisher poets and fishermen and storytellers and just regular, wonderful person. But I invited Dave here today because he has, over the last few years, been branching out into all kinds of writings, poetry, essays, and we don't get a chance to talk about that because we always focus on the Fisher Poets. And Fisher Poets is happening this year. It's going to be virtual, but it's going to be great. So stay tuned for that. We'll hear more about that in January. So, Dave, I'm delighted. I've been reading your material. Well, I was going to ask you, actually, have you been writing all your life, or did you get kind of amped up because fishermen were asked to write poetry for the gathering? What's the sequence here?
No, I started writing on the boat. I'd write a little four-liner, something funny had happened, and like just kind of to poke fun at my crew, or you know, just tease my crew or something. And then, and I'd write a little rhyming forehead, kind of rhyme in my head, and so I'd go stand in the door with a cup of coffee and tell my crew. And then something happened and to one of my friends, and I just kind of a little poem came to me, and so I wrote him a little poem about it and read it on the radio, and pretty soon somebody said, "Hey, you got any more?" And so I started, but it was just all for fun. And then after my dad and son drowned, everything went pretty dark for several years. I didn't do any writing at all. And then one day, three poems came at once, and it was on again. And then I started writing a little more seriously. And it seemed like commercial fishermen were getting a bad rap in the press a lot of the time. And I kept thinking somebody needs to start telling our side of the story, telling about the lives that are behind those trays of fish in the supermarket and so on, that there's people living, dying, loving, divorcing, and having kids and stuff, but it's all about families and stuff. There's more to it than just catching fish. Mm-hmm. And so I started writing some protest poetry. So anyway, I started getting more serious about the writing. And then the first year, Gino called me up and said, "Hey, Gino Leach said, hey, they're talking about some of us fishermen getting together and reading some poetry. You know anybody that writes poetry?" And I said, "As a matter of fact, old buddy." And
oh wow!
But I missed the first year because I moved down from Alaska, and I was looking for something to do in the wintertime, and I wasn't set up to go fishing, so I started. I went and got my CDL and was long hauling, and because I wanted to see the country too, and I figured I could get in a big semi, which I just love because just like being in a boat. But also, somebody was paying me to see the country. Way that was, God, that was win, win, win. So the first year I couldn't go because I had to be on the road. But the second year I made it.
So CDL is commercial driver's license, is that it?
Yes.
Driving truck. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know that part. So, it was extremely organic the way this whole thing came about for you. And what year, do you recall what year are we talking? Ish, not exactly necessarily. I can't remember how many years we've been doing the Fisher Poets. So,
well, let's see. I think it was about 96 or 97 when Fisher Poets started.
Okay.
And let's see, I started writing probably in the early 70s.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you mentioned when your father and your son both drowned, I believe it was on the birthday?
Yeah, my son's 14th birthday, June 28th, 1985.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So when did you write that powerful, poignant poem about that experience?
It was quite a few years later. And originally, I just wrote it for myself, kind of just to memorialize my son. And then I had it in with my poetry that I was reading it for the Fisher Poets one year, and it just came to me. I just had a feeling that somebody needs to hear this. Somebody needs to hear this, and so I trotted out and read it. And I wasn't planning on ever sharing it with the public. It was pretty personal. But I found out later that there was somebody there that had just lost their son, and they were not doing very well.
Mm-hmm.
And it encouraged them when they heard my poem. And I was there on stage and sharing with them the loss of my son and my father at the same time. They said it gave them strength. And I found over the years, every time I get that feeling that somebody needs to hear this poem, if I read it, I always hear a story afterwards. There was actually somebody that did need to hear.
Yeah.
And so that's been my silver lining is sharing my own pain, my own grief or whatever with the world through my poetry, because, you know, it's just part of living.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to. It's just the way it is. We are going to lose loved ones. That's part of.
Mm-hmm.
Living is terminal. But
right. Yeah.
And that was very premature. But at the same time, by sharing that and by reaching out and through my poetry, I've tried to do a lot more than just write about fishing. I've tried to share my own experiences so people know that. You know, they're not in this alone. We're all in this together. We all have the same hurts and bumps and bruises and so on, in one way or the other. And if I can reach out and help somebody and by sharing my own pain, and it gives them a little bit more strength to carry on with, that's my silver lining.
Well, you know, I think you're 100% correct. And I think many poets and writers would echo the sentiments you just expressed. The interesting thing about you is that you came to it from a different route. As you say, you were writing these sort of almost sound like limericks or something to for fun, and while doing your work on the boat, and then you. What, discovered in yourself as well that this was satisfying to be able to express beyond the joking around? Is that kind of...
Yeah, and I don't think it comes from me. I have a poem about that, in fact, and I'd like to read to you. And this poem I would like to dedicate to you, Carol, because, you know, you've been promoting the arts for a long time, and you do so much for us artists, and I don't know how often it gets noticed, just how much you do, but I have a little poem here I want to read. It's called Love Letter to the, or Love Poem to the Muse, but it's also about for you as a promoter of the arts and an artist yourself.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, here it goes. As I've walked through this life, the trip has not always been too smooth. Seems happiness has always come with some very heavy dues. But the gifts I've been given have been so rich and plenty. How could I not just give thanks my box of grievances completely empty. Because the goddess of Muse has bestowed a special gift on me, the gifts of rhyme, the gifts of words, to this simple man of the sea. Oh, I've oftentimes been surprised at the precious gifts they bring. As I looked at what my pen has wrought, in amazement, my heart will sing. I am their lover, their disciple. Gladly their servant I will be, with only one abiding wish, they'd never tire or abandon me. O Calliope, goddess of poetry, I humbly worship at your feet. The gift you bestowed, if ever withdrawn, would leave me empty and incomplete. Yes, these daughters of Zeus, so generous, how could I not give back a poem of love? Let these humble words be carried forth on the wings of a snow-white loving dove.
Wow. I am very moved and humbled. Thank you so much. That's a beautiful, beautiful piece. And again, having watched you over the years and seen how, what a kind, giving person you are. Now, I didn't know you back in the days when you were out on the seas up in Alaska. I don't know what you were like, but I don't think people changed that much. So I am I'm very happy that that you're finding a way through poetry to share with the rest of us. I would like you to tell me, since so much of your writing at the beginning and beyond, if you started in the 70s, was related to your fishing experiences. Were they also related to, for example, living in Alaska, growing up there and on the boats? And did that transfer easily to other experiences in life?
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. And I think, you know, running crews, I started skippering when I was really, really young. I took out my first crew when I was 13 years old, and then I worked on deck. But by the time I was 23, I was running king crab boats in the Bering Sea. And so I had a lot of interaction with people and so on. And there's quite a few people would probably say that I was much more of a hard ass than what people real think down here. But, you know, you have to do things a certain way, and things mm-hmm. have to be a certain way. And somebody's a skipper, and there's certain lines that just don't get crossed. Mm-hmm. And so it's different. But it did teach me a lot over the years. I've learned a lot. I've watched people get hurt, not physically. I've been very lucky to have kept my crew safe, but I watched, you know, people get hurt emotionally with mm-hmm. losses and so on, and had lots of my own, and so I tried to take it to heart and learn lessons from it.
So what are you mostly writing about these days?
Well, whatever the muse hands me, I'm just the runner of the pen, basically. I just whatever she hands me at the time. So, I'm trying to do a little bit more social comment, and
mm-hmm.
I've
commentary.
Got one. If you want to hear another one,
sure.
It's called Tolerance.
Okay.
This is kind of one I kind of like. It just kind of came to me.
Okay.
They say it takes less muscles to smile than it does to make a frown. And it sure feels better to lift someone up than it does to put them down. Love may at times be painful, but isn't life truly great? Better have loved and lost than live with intolerance and hate. Seems to me life is sweeter when we're kind to each other. Why is it so hard to remember we are each other's brother? Isn't the road simply easier to travel, earning respect by giving the same? accepting our differences with tolerance instead of looking for something or someone to blame. The Bible says it very well. Be wise as serpents, but harmless as doves. But oftentimes we hear the truly rich is he who's deeply loved. It seems so very simple. Why is it so hard to see? If we could just accept each other as is, think how much richer life could be. We are all in this together. Matters not race, gender, or creed, only how we treat each other in word, action, and deed.
Okay. I'll write that on the board and put it in the window. It sounds good. Sounds good. Are you writing essays as well these days or sticking to poetry, and why?
Yeah, I finished a book, I guess a couple of years ago now, two or three years ago, called Growing Up Wild. It's short stories about my growing up in different places and so on. And then tomorrow's Saturday. Sunday. I usually post a poem on Sunday.
Oh.
And this coming Sunday, I'm going to post an essay, a short story about, it's a Christmas story. The name of it is Christmas in March.
Okay. Wait, where do you post these? Is this private stuff or can...
It's on Facebook and it's public. Oh.
Okay, well,
on Facebook.
Yeah, I'm not on Facebook, but other people are. How do they find it?
I guess it just, I don't know. I presume it's just open to anybody.
Just
go on Facebook and Google my name, I guess.
Put your name
I'm
in.
Not sure.
Dave Densmore. Is it Dave? Is that how you write it? Dave Densmore.
Yes.
Densmore. Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, someday if I'm with somebody with Facebook, I'll have to take a look. So
yeah, I've got quite a bit of poetry on there. I've been doing it for several years, winters.
And you have published several books. Anything recently? You said the last one was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, the last one was Growing Up Wild, the short stories. I'm working on a book now, short stories about dogs that have owned me.
Oh, I love it. Okay, I can't wait for that. That's terrific. So then I'll go back to the why. Are you still fishing? And and do you feel, I don't know if this is a fair question, but do you see this as a natural combination, fishing and writing?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. There's, you know, if you're open to it, there's so much blessings and so many gifts on the ocean and being given if you're open to it. I've been on deck late at night, watch the sunset at midnight when I should be in bed. Everybody else is in bed, but it's just such these glorious sunrises and sunsets and watching whales and watching sea otters play around the boat and I have a deep respect and love for fish, even though I harvest them. It's just part. I feel like I am part of the rhythm of nature as a harvester of fish. I'm feeding people, and I just I interpret it different than a lot of people. It's not how I make money. It's just it puts me as close to nature's pocket as I can be.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and I'm just wondering whether, for example, the way you just described seeing sunsets and sunrises and the moon, the process going from that wonder and that awe to sitting down and writing it out. Can you articulate that? I don't know if it's something you can say, because you said it kind of comes through you. So you just have a pen around at all times, and you just start scribbling.
Yeah, I wrote a poem a few years ago. I haven't got it right here in front of me, but it's I was sitting on the flying bridge, and we had a big year shaping up, and the fish were coming hard and fast, and it was kind of blowing and rainy and windy, and I was working my net and watching the fish come, and I was trapping all of them I could, and all of a sudden the poem started coming, and I it just started forming in my head, and I was I don't want you now. Get away from me. I'm busy. These fish are coming down the beach. I just had to give up. I just had to run down, grab a pen and paper, and start scratching it out on the flying bridge while I was trying to keep track of the fish, keep track of my net,
keep
the boat off the beach because I was working close to the beach, and get this poem down to us. So, it just whenever it comes, and it comes of its own volition. I've written a few, that, you know, where I've actually picked a subject and written, but the best ones come of their own volition.
So it sounds as though you you're a very good multitasker, and probably you had to be to skipper the boats. So this is adding just a whole nother layer to what you've done. And I bet it's extremely satisfying. And you recommend it, I gather.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I'm hearing that. So.
Although the fishing industry has changed a lot in my lifetime, it's gotten far more technical, and we're getting put in boxes now where it used to be wide open. You could just, if one fishery wasn't working for you, you'd just gear up and go fish another fishery, but anymore with limited entry and so on, And so many of the fisheries are being overcapitalized, so you just have to scramble and go so hard all the time. Mm-hmm. So,
Well, I'm sure we're going to hear more about that subject and other folks who are involved in it come the end of February. And I hope that you're enjoying this season. With the changing weather and the changing light. And one of these days, I'll get to see you in person. But in the meantime, I'm thrilled and delighted. Do you have one last poem for us?
Sure. Well, I've got two poems if you want them. But let's see. I'll tell you, this is probably not a good one to end on, with being Christmas and all that. But when George Floyd was murdered, I watched it, and the next day, and this was poem was sent to me by the gods. I sit down to think about it, and this is what came out of my pen. It's simply called George Floyd. Mm-hmm. Another innocent, unarmed man's been killed, and as usual, he was black. Why the hell does color of skin mean there's a target on your back? 400 years of mindless hatred has sown some very bitter seeds. The so-called supreme race is belied by reprehensible deeds. A man murdered, killed, begging as his life was purposely snuffed. When are we going to stand up and declare enough is enough? Oft times heard my father say, but for the grace of God, there go I. Watching this evil sickness upon us, sometimes wonder if grace of God is just a lie. Is this what we've become? No, it's what we've always been. History shows hateful prejudice has just maybe humanity's original sin. All the people ask is equality, yet it's being blatantly denied. How can we not expect our cities to burn when so many have so cruelly, needlessly died? Neither words, nor fire, nor collective grief can bring one single forfeited life back. It's going to take a major change of the collective heart to stop seeing each other as simply brown, white, or black. Try a smile or a simple hello. See the person, not just the color of their skin. One act of kindness at a time may finally let the healing begin. Pray God George Floyd's senseless killing finally opens our eyes to the evilness of hate. We must turn this thing around, and I swear it's not too late.
Oh, Dave. Dave, thank you so much. I actually think that is the perfect poem to end with here at Christmas time, talking about killing innocent people, and it's not too late to make a difference. I so appreciate your passion and this skill that you have developed to express, and you're sharing it with all of us. Dave Densmore is my guest, folks. You can find him on Facebook, and he gives a gift apparently every Sunday. So check it out. And if you live in the Astoria area, you already know him. And if you don't, you can join us at the end of February for Fisher Poets, and I'm sure we'll see Dave there. Thank you so, so much, Dave.
Well, thank you for having me, Carol. I've enjoyed it.
Okay. Well, take care, and keep on writing, and keep on loving.
All right, kiddo. Love
Bye-bye.
You. See ya. Thanks.
And that was Patrick Ball with Legends of the Celtic Harp, Music and Stories of the Christmas Season with Lisa Lynn and Arye Frankfurter. This is KMUN wishing you all a good holiday, light and love and hope. Thanks for being here.